The notice at the entrance to Winter Wonderland announced that Santa Claus was at lunch and would be back at 2 o'clock. Santa Claus, otherwise the elderly Charlie Green of the packing department at Thompson's Superstores, was already at his post, discreetly concealed behind a Hessian curtain. It was only 1:45, but Charlie always returned from his lunch break in good time to prepare himself for the afternoon duty. A tall, upright, broad-shouldered man, every inch of him proclaimed his years of service in the county regiment. This was the 9th year he'd acted as Santa Claus at the stores. The management was confident that he was the man for the job, and so was Charlie. Or he had been, up till today. Somehow, the magic was missing this year. His enthusiasm was beginning to wane. He definitely not felt well disposed to most of the children who had visited him that morning, though he had, of course, concealed it under his white whiskers and hearty Christmas greetings. He directed a scornful glance at Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer. Rudolph returned a mild, glassy-eyed look, his head nodding gently, and his nose, lit by a lamp, glowing feebly. "I've never seen anything like it in my life," thought Charlie. But he couldn't really blame the Winter Wonderland, in spite of its idiot-faced gnomes and the unfortunate Rudolph. Something must have gone wrong with Christmas to make him feel like this. Everyone's spending themselves silly, and nothing to show for it, except a load of plastic rubbish that wouldn't last 5 minutes when the kids got hold of it. He looked at his watch. 7 minutes to 0 hour. Now, fully clad in his Santa Claus outfit, right down to the black varnished gumboots, he sat on the sledge behind Rudolph and listened to the din from the toy department outside. Charlie's memory went back over the years to the Christmas mornings of his own childhood. Waking up in the cold and dark to find the stocking at the foot of his bed, bulging with mysterious lumps, and a parcel or two beside it. No electric light to switch on in those days. Just feeling the lumps and bumps in the stocking, trying to guess what Father Christmas had left him. And then, in the first grey light of dawn, the excitement of discovering a box of red-coated lead soldiers, a game of snap, a jack-in-the-box, a wooden top, plain chocolate squares wrapped in red and green silver paper, an orange, some walnuts, and 3 shining new coins. Kids wouldn't even look at them today, thought Charlie. But what pleasure those simple things had given him. The clock of St. Mary's in the High Street struck 2. The Hessian curtain was pulled open and tied back. Mr. Whitmore, the manager of the toy department, performed this ceremony every afternoon. Charlie made a final adjustment to his Christmas whiskers and checked that the sack was topped up with gifts. Every parcel was marked with a letter and a number, a secret code known only to himself, to ensure that no beefy little boy would get a doll and that no little girl would get a toy pistol. That was the least he could do for his young customers. Jane, a temporary young sales assistant dressed in a tight-fitting pixie's outfit, stood at the entrance to issue tickets for the Wonderland and a present from Santa. The sight of her made Charlie feel somehow better, and he returned her smile with a regal wave. "Ah, there's life in the old dog yet," he muttered. And then he turned his attention to the first visitors of the afternoon. 30 minutes went by, with Charlie dispensing jovial greetings and gaily wrapped parcels in exchange for little red tickets. Then came a lull, and he looked out of the tiny window in a wooden partition that screened the Wonderland from the rest of the toy department. From here he had a view of the doll counter, presided over by the aging Miss Knott, who at that moment was demonstrating some highly expensive walking dolls to an equally expensive-looking young woman in a grey fur coat. There was a tough little boy with her, about 8 years old, creating general havoc while his mother took her time in choosing a present that was evidently not for him. Seeing Charlie's face in the little window, the boy poked out his tongue at him and kicked over a large doll which fell with a crash into the chimpanzee's tea party, set out on the floor near the counter. This took the attention of the mother and Miss Knott, so that they didn't see, as Charlie could, a tall, pale youth in a loose black overcoat, strolled casually up to the chair on which the woman had placed her lizard-skin handbag. A quick look over his shoulder, a sudden grab at the bag, which went easily into an inside pocket of the overcoat, and he was off, confident that no one had spotted him. But he'd reckoned without Santa Claus. Telling Jane to hold the fort, Charlie went swiftly and silently through the crowded toy department to the top of the stairs down which the thief was rapidly disappearing. Unfortunately, several children followed him, and the noise they made caused the youth to look round. Seeing the large figure of Santa Claus approaching, evidently in pursuit, he made a sudden dash to the main exit on the ground floor. Charlie hitched up his robe and ran after him, scattering shoppers left and right. Mr. Whitmore, watching in dismay from the top of the stairs, said, "Oh, my God, this'll ruin our Christmas image." With Miss Knott calling him to help her with an hysterical woman who had lost her handbag, a ghastly little boy, who seemed determined to wreck the whole department, and a tearful Jane left with a wonderland and a group of impatient parents and children on her hands, poor Mr. Whitmore's world was collapsing about him. But he had enough sense to let Charlie get on with it while he stayed with the sinking ship of the toy department. "Close the wonderland," he said to Jane. "Tell them Santa's gone to get some more toys." And then, addressing himself to the hysterical mother, "Come into my office and sit down, madam, and the little boy as well, if you please." Downstairs, scattered display stands in haberdashery and cosmetics marked the route of the chase. Charlie was well out into the high street by now, determined not to lose his prey. His loud, angry cries of, "Stop, thief, and come here, you horrible hooligan," mingled oddly with the strains of Silent Night from the carol party outside St. Mary's. The vicar, on his way to join the carolers at St. Mary's, expressed the opinion that it must be something for a new television comedy series. "But I think they've overstepped the mark this time," he said. By now, Charlie, who in spite of his 64 years was sounder in wind and limb than the youth, was storming along an alleyway into which his quarry had disappeared. Knowing it to be a cul-de-sac, he felt sure he had at last got the villain bottled up. As he got to the alleyway, the youth peered furtively out of it. With a roar that almost stopped the traffic, Charlie leapt upon him. The youth wriggled furiously as he felt an iron grip on his shoulder. And then, like an eel, he managed to slip out of the overcoat. Charlie, still holding the coat, fell sprawling on his back, and the young man vanished in the crowded high street. Charlie had lost his man. But there was one consolation. The lizard-skin handbag was still in the overcoat. Charlie picked himself up and looked inside the bag. Among a wealth of feminine accessories was a thick wad of notes. "Must be 200 quid in that lot," he muttered, and quickly closed the bag again. There appeared to be no means of identifying the youth from anything in the coat pockets. But half a dozen valuable cigarette lighters in one of them were obviously stolen property as well. "Well, I've emptied his stocking for him," said Charlie, to the interested crowd that had gathered round him in the street. "Are you all right, Dad?" asked a traffic warden who had witnessed the end of the chase. Yes, I'm all right," said Charlie. "Oh, I wish I'd caught the villain, though. I would have done, if I'd had some help from the public." He glared for a moment at the bystanders. "Cord help us," he said. With which he proceeded to make his way back to Thompson's Stores, wearily, but with the dignity of one who has done his duty in the face of great odds. His feet were killing him, but his lunchtime depression had completely gone, and he paid scant attention to the facetious remarks that greeted him as he walked along the crowded street carrying a long black overcoat and a lizard-skin handbag. Reporting to Mr. Whitmore's office on his return, he found the manager with a fur-coated woman, the dreadful boy, the store detective, and a policeman. Mr. Whitmore almost wept with relief when Charlie showed him the handbag with the money still in it. The store detective was still rather put out by what he considered to be ill-advised and ham-fisted action on Charlie's part, but was nonetheless gratified to see the return of the money and the cigarette lighters. The policeman noted Charlie's description of the thief and congratulated him on recovering the stolen property. The young mother, having checked that the contents of her bag were all present and correct, was singularly undemonstrative. Now that her money was safe, she evidently felt it would be a waste of time and emotion to express too much gratitude. She regarded the dishevelled, sweating figure of Santa Claus with faint distaste and handed him 2 or 3 small coins. Thank you so much, she said in a bored, flat voice. Sorry I haven't any more change. Dodging a hefty kick from the small boy, Charlie mumbled something under his beard and went over to the Winter Wonderland, where Jane was still vainly trying to pacify a crowd of protesting children.
Oh, I'm glad to see you, she said. I got so worried when I heard what was happening. He might have had a gun. The thief, I mean.
Oh, not that joker, my dear, laughed Charlie. He wouldn't have had the strength to pull the trigger. While Jane put his whiskers straight, he looked again at the money in his hand. His reward amounted to the price of a present from Santa.
Here, put this in your till, he said to Jane, and tell the kids I'll be ready in a minute. There's just one little boy that Santa Claus nearly forgot.
He went to his sack of toys and searched for a gift marked D4. He was deliberately sabotaging his own precious code system. Every parcel marked D4 contained a Dolly's wash day outfit, suitable for little girls aged 4 to 5. He walked out into the toy department, where the fur-coated mother, in order to try and keep her small son quiet, had just bought him a rapid-firing gun. Charlie went over to her, unnoticed by the boy, who was already aiming the gun in the direction of Miss Knott, and handed her the small parcel.
"Put this in your little boy's stocking, ma'am," he said. "And best wishes to you both for a very merry Christmas."